Welcome to the final edition of Getting to Know You for 2021. You're in for a treat as we join our host, Susie B., for the interesting story of Pam Owens from Kentucky.
Welcome, everyone, to tonight's edition of Getting to Know You. This is December 2021, the last of this year, and tonight's guest is Pam Owens. Pam, hello.
Hi, Susie and everyone.
Okay, I'm going to be asking you a number of questions, so we can just take it question by question, and we'll get to all the details. Where were you born?
I was born in San Francisco, California.
Okay, and is that where you grew up?
Well, I grew up in San Francisco until my senior year of high school, when my parents made the choice to move to San Bruno, which not too many people are familiar with that area, but San Bruno was a suburb of San Francisco, and it was next to, up close to Burlingame and that area.
Okay, well, we're just going to take baby steps on these questions. Were you born blind, or did the vision deteriorate later?
I was born blind, or I was born too soon. I believe that's called an ROP baby now. But I was born 2 months too soon. I was put in an incubator, and the incubator damaged my eyes. So I'm a blind from birth person.
Gotcha. Do you have brothers and sisters, or are you it?
I had two younger brothers, and I was the only girl and the oldest of the family. My two younger brothers are deceased, but we had a lot of good times playing together when we were growing up. We were real close when we were young adults, and my brother Chant was the first to go, and he was 39. Mark died in 2012. So 2012 was not good for me either. The prophecies of doom and gloom didn't happen, but they happened personally.
Okay, let's step back a bit. Where did you go to school? Did you go to public school, or did you go to a school for the blind?
I went to both. I went to public school in Sherman and Lawton Elementary School, and Marina Junior High, and Poly High School. And then I went in my fifth and sixth grades, I went to the Berkeley School for the Blind, or as everybody refers to it as, I went to Berkeley for a couple of years.
Okay, when you were in public school, did you have good resources such as Braille, mobility, recorded books, or whatever that you needed?
I had a good resource room where all of us blind kids met the first thing in the morning before we went to regular classes. They provided good Braille books. The recording options were very selective. And mobility, I started taking mobility I got a little mobility in fourth grade, and I took mobility in junior high and high school. And then, of course, at the Berkeley School for the Blind, we just ran around without our canes and thought nothing of it. But I did have a bit of mobility in the School for the Blind.
Okay. When you went to the School for the Blind, did you stay on campus? And also, were you able to do things at the School for the Blind that you were just not able to do in public school?
I stayed on campus. I was what was called a weekender. I stayed on campus during the week and went home, got picked up to go home Friday night after we all went to the candy store and got our candy and got back to school on Sunday evening in time to watch Lassie. So it worked out good that way. And yes, there were things with it. Nobody knew how to incorporate me into things like PE. So I would sit on the sideline. I'd be on the sidelines, and the teacher would just, if you know how to do jumping jacks, do them or whatever. Now, I fully participated in PE in the School for the Blind, and I loved it. I fully participated in, I don't know if they even have it anymore, but homemaking in the School for the Blind, and started learning to cook. And I loved being around kids where I could play all of the games with them.
So at School for the Blind, you actually were just a regular kid who, like everybody else, just couldn't see well, right?
Yes, right.
I know for some of us, when we were in the School for the Blind, we took a lot of music, although I understand now TSB doesn't even have a music department, which is unbelievable. But were you involved in any sort of music lessons or in the band or anything like that?
I wasn't involved with music lessons. I'm your typical shower singer, and I haven't even tried karaoke yet. I can carry a tune, and I'm glad for that, but no, I didn't have music lessons other than piano lessons with the very British Mr. Bailey. And when we tried to play the latest Beatles song instead of sticking with Chopsticks or Swans on the Lake, and to him, it just plain, this is not amusing. And he was one of the teachers we had a lot of fun with. But I was more into drama than I was into music. And that began in junior high and high school.
Okay, tell us about it. Were you in some plays? And if so, what was your favorite?
I was in a play and in drama at CSB. And I played a girl who was, and I can't even remember the name of the play, but I played a girl that was bratty. I think I got cast according to my general attitude, and it was a lot of fun just getting up there and being an awful little spoiled brat. I didn't get to do that at home and in real life, so I took full advantage of it. And then in high school, I was, and I had to go back to remember this, but I was in the choir for a semester, and I enjoyed it. I was an alto at the time, but almost a soprano. And my favorite play in high school, they were just homespun high school plays. And I was in high school at the time that Black is Beautiful and the whole civil rights things came to the forefront. So I played a white girl meeting a Black guy, and I got to play it up to the hilt, because, you know, everything had to be played up to the hilt then. And that was a lot of fun.
Can you think of one instance in high school that occurred that kind of stands out in your mind? It doesn't have to be anything that you, well, it could be an accomplishment. It can be something, some sort of prank, or can you think of something that happened in high school that kind of stands out in your mind?
I can think of something in junior high that stands out in my mind. And in junior high, I went to school with 98%, about 97-98% Chinese. And at that time, they had their own culture, and they had, they were just didn't blend into, they were busy with school, Chinese school. They lived in Chinatown. They all spoke Chinese to each other. And we were the, even though they were American, we were the Americans. So one incident that stands out really in my mind is this boy said, you know, I'll teach you Chinese. And I said, okay. And he was Chinese, and he was a practical joker. So he says, C-E-I-L-I-N-G, with his Chinese accent. And he said, that means, hi, how are you? And I'm fine or something. But each letter meant something. And then I thought it through, and it meant, see, it was just spelling ceiling. And when I think about that, I laugh.
All right. After you graduated from high school, did you go to, say, vocational school or maybe a rehab thing or college work? Or what did you do when you graduated from high school?
Well, when I graduated from high school, I moved back to San Francisco to be with these friends of mine. And I went to the San Francisco Junior College. And then when I moved back home temporarily with my parents, I went to San Mateo Junior College. And then I went to the Orientation Center for the Blind for completion and things like mobility and cooking and sewing classes, which I took at CSB and didn't take in public school, sewing classes and all, you know, all the necessities, abacus, which I don't use anymore and I'd have to learn it again. And that's what I did when I graduated from high school.
After being at the rehab center, did you start working or go for more training? Or what did you do?
Well, at the at the orientation center, I met a guy that was legally blind, but was a very high partial at the time. He had diabetes. He was 21, turned 21, so we were about half a year. He was half a year older than me. And we only went together for a month before we got married. And we got married, and there were a lot of, it was a marriage that didn't work, and we were planning on starting a family, but we weren't able to, and it was a marriage that didn't work. But when I got back from the OCB, I was a housewife, and also I was going to college, junior college once again in San Mateo. No, Kenyatta was in Redwood City, excuse me. I'm hauling out the archives here, and I continued there, and then when we separated, I moved to Santa Rosa, and my roommate in Santa Rosa, Kathy, and I were going to Santa Rosa JC, and then Bob and I got back together, and we looked for housing in Santa Rosa, but it was not to be found. It was a student town all the way, and every available rental was filled with students. And because there were so many students rooming together, they could afford to raise the rent. So we ended up moving back to San Carlos, where my parents had moved, and they had a real cute little in-law cottage that we lived in for a year, and I continued with JC Junior College there, and I had a few telephone opportunities to work, but I didn't keep them because they were better known as telemarketer type opportunities, and I just couldn't spit out my message and talk fast enough not to let people in to hang up and everything, so they just hung up on me, and I felt kind of guilty even doing that to people.
Okay, now after all of this happened, I think you've had some jobs that we might want to talk about. What kind of jobs have you had?
Well, I was working at Rome Corporation, an infancy computer developing corporation. And I was working at what they termed a receptionist, which meant you were on the console. It was phone work. You were on the console. People called. You switched them to the people that they ask for and the departments that they ask for and all. And they were, it was 1980, and they were so much, you know, the cute computer was still in its infancy. So there were a lot of crashes and a lot of shutdowns and everything while they were developing everything. And it was really interesting, and it was way, way before all of our modern conveniences like this one, and email and online shopping and Facebook and streaming and all. I mean, really infancy. And then I worked for a place called Urban Ministries. I was a receptionist. I was at the front desk greeting people and taking the phone calls and just sending people from the front desk to the department they were looking for, connecting people on the phone to the department they were looking for. And with sorting the mail, I didn't have anything to sort the mail with, so I'd always have help with that. And it was Urban Ministry, and it also had a department for parents and mentally ill adults. But they just shortened it down to PAMI offices. So I'd have to answer the phone. Urban Ministries and PAMI offices. This is Pam.
I thought you had a company named after yourself. Well, one of your friends in this room told me to ask you about your job with the 700 Club?
I was a counselor for the 700 Club for, it was about 6 years at least. And it was in the late 70s and early 80s. We were trained to, when somebody calls, you let them express their problem as long as they wanted to express their problem. At least that's how it was then. And you pray for them, and no matter what, you stay in professional mode. Or no matter what you think or are feeling or whether you're being put on, you listen, and you listen as though you believe everything that they're saying, whether you do or not, and you pray for them with compassion, which wasn't hard to do because most of the calls were very real. At first, we counseled in a room that was the upstairs room in my home church, which also had a Christian school. But later on, in about 1980 or 79, somewhere around there, counselors could counsel from home. And when somebody called the 700 Club, they wouldn't ever have our phone numbers, but the 700 Club would connect, phone service would just send it over to one of our home numbers. And it wasn't like an operator. They didn't tell them they were doing that. It would just go to our home phone numbers. So this was, we had pranksters, and they were a lot freer to be pranksters then, because their phone number wouldn't show up on the screen of our phone, and they weren't as traceable as everything is now. So this guy called me. It may have been a teenage prank, who knows, but he said, and I said, 700 Club, this is Pam. And he said, I'm having trouble with my bowels. And I had to do this with a straight face, or at least sound like I was. And he says, I'm going to go to sit on the toilet, and I'm going to have you pray for me not to have trouble with my bowels. And so he sat on the toilet. And I could hear him peeing or doing something that was that he could make sound like him peeing and everything. And I was sitting there thinking, buddy, you don't need prayers for your bowels. They're as much in working order, I suspect, as your mouth. But I just prayed. I said, okay, in Jesus' name, poop! And that's all I can do with that call.
All right. Well, I hope there was great success there. After the 700 Club, did you work anywhere else? And we'll answer that first, then I've got another question.
After the 700 Club, I went to Bible College in not Santa Rosa. Let's get these files straight. I went to Bible College in San Jose Bible College. Rehab paid for it because San Jose Bible College was accredited. So I thoroughly enjoyed Bible College. It's just wonderful. And then after I got out, I continued working for Urban Ministries. And then I moved back to San Carlos to take care of my parents because their health, they were having serious health problems. Mom wasn't able to really get out of bed, so she did the budgeting for her and Dad, because that could be done, you know, in bed. But I took over, and I was used to budgeting for myself, so I just continued to do so. But I when I moved back to San Carlos, I took over the cooking and the cleaning and the arranging for getting groceries and everything, and took care of them until, took care of Mom until she died in 2001.
Now, when did you, and when and where did you meet Ken?
Well, in 2000, when Mom's health had deteriorated a bit worse, Dad had my brother Mark hire Ken to remodel our bathroom. Ken was in masonry. He was a bricklayer, and he was a jack of all trades. He remodeled, refurbished homes, did real good brickwork, and did a lot of good tile work. And Mark brought him home to retile and remodel our bathroom. And that's where I met him, and the relationship grew.
Well, I know, sadly, you lost Ken this year. How long were you all married?
It would have been 20 years next month.
Now, did you all have any children?
No, we didn't. Ken had two children from his first marriage. And they never considered me their stepmother, but we get along real well. We became very close. And I have a granddaughter through marriage from Ken's youngest son. And her name is Maddie, and she's 19 now. My first husband and I weren't able to conceive.
Now, you lived in California all that time. How did you end up in Kentucky? That's kind of a stretch.
It's a long move. Ken was semi-retired, which meant that he still took on a lot of jobs, but it was just like a baby step into retirement. And his brothers and sisters all lived in Cincinnati. And his cousins lived here in Kentucky, southeastern Kentucky. So we moved back here to be with his family.
Gotcha. All right, one area we have not covered, I think you hinted to it earlier, but how do you handle shopping, like grocery shopping and other shopping? And what about transportation where you live?
Well, transportation where I live, public transportation is very sparse. However, I handle shopping through Walmart, through Walmart, through Kroger's, through Amazon, good old Amazon, and for groceries. And I have a neighbor that when he goes shopping, I email him my list and pay him, and he picks up my groceries while he's there. And the Hutton family have been really a lot of help. And when I need to go to the doctor, Roger Hutton, who became close friends with Ken and I, will take me to the doctor. or Maxine, his wife. And I don't have any problem with transportation because so many people around here don't have car. I mean, it's a problem. It would be a huge problem 30, 40, 50 years ago. But people, a lot of people around here don't have cars and depend on each other, somebody for transportation anyway, so it's pretty common. But I can get Amazon, you know, Amazon will deliver to my door, and the other online shopping I do comes right to the mailbox or the UPS box that Ken put up about 5 years ago for that purpose. And with Walmart, Walgreens, Better Health Naturally, Vitabase Health, Amazon, and the ones I use, they all deliver, which makes things way easier. And with Kroger's, although they don't deliver here, I can get the groceries, have them packed and ready to go, choose a delivery time, and Roger Jr. or Roger Sr. will just pick them up when they're getting their groceries, and they're here.
Well, it sounds like you've got very industrious and have been able to, you know, work things out. That's great. All right, let's skip a little bit. Do you have any hobbies?
Yes, I love to read. I'm another online gamer with RS Games and Quincy's Playhouse, and I enjoy cooking, and I enjoy having frozen entrees on hand or things that I've already cooked and sectioned off into separate meals on hand for when I don't enjoy cooking. I thoroughly enjoy music, and I have had the budget, so I have, but I thoroughly enjoy shopping online. And I like descriptive movies, and Ken and I enjoyed flea marketing, garage sales when we were in Cincinnati, going to auctions, and we enjoyed going to the movies together and shopping together.
How did you learn about VIP?
Well, I was on ICC, and I got on ICC in about 2011, and when Tim, he read something that made him afraid of streaming, and when that happened, I was told about ICC and the varied activities on ICC through another friend that wasn't content. I mean, on VIP from another friend who wasn't content with Tim's ruling against limiting streaming. And that's how I found out about VIP. And I am so, so glad I did.
Well, I know I often see you in a room where you all are playing music, and it was real obvious to me that you enjoyed that. Is there anything that you would like to add that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there is. Except that although this Christmas was very difficult, I am so surprised. It was like there were some areas of Christmas that were a real godsend literally, like the VIP activities, the ACB activities, the my Christmas Eve with the Hutton family, because it turned out beautifully. And I just like to add, it's amazing how God, when you need to be Him to carry you through something that I dreaded this time. I mean, this loss of Ken and everything, and I just hoped all of our time together that it wouldn't happen. But I'm just amazed at how God carries you through. I'm also amazed at how real online friends and activities are.
I agree wholeheartedly. Well, you've got a lot of VIP friends in here tonight that obviously care for you a great deal and are very pleased that they got to know more about you, but hold on to your seat because they're going to get a chance to ask questions. Now, if anybody asks something that you really don't want to answer, don't get nervous about it. Just say, let's move on. For those of you asking questions, when you hear somebody asking a question, please let go of the key, because otherwise Pam won't get a chance to answer. And I think we'll have plenty of time for everyone to ask, well, at least one question, but limit it to one until everyone has had a chance, and then we'll see if there's time for a second question. So Pam, thank you so much for allowing me to interview you, and thanks for whoever recommended her. And here, let's let the questions begin. No one has a question for Pam?
Pam, let me tell you, I was really glad to see when you came over to VIP. I saw you around ICC occasionally, but and I think you fit in really good. You're always a pleasure to spend time with. You're always happy, which is a good way to do it. I also think the VIP community over Christmas has sort of gave us a little place to hang out with, or people to spend time with if we're on our own. How old were you when you met Ken?
I was 49 when I met Ken, and, well, hate to admit it, but I was 50 when we married.
Well, Pam, I just want to say it's been great knowing you. I'm glad you can become a VIP member. You've been a good one. So does that mean you're 69 years old now? Wait a minute. I had to do that, didn't I? But it's been a pleasure having you with us.
No, I'm 39 and holding, even with skid marks on my fingernails. And I don't have to worry about my age. I mean, it's just like maturity didn't hit, and senility hasn't yet either, so you're close.
You'll be beautiful at any age, Pam.
I'm sorry, I drifted a little bit. Did you talk at all about your love for cooking? Because I know you, every time you're on the Let's Cooking thing with Marcia, you always have so much to contribute to that.
Yeah, I did talk about my love for cooking. And that's one thing that I'm enjoying a lot right now, because I can experiment with things. I miss Ken like crazy, but I can experiment with things that Ken didn't care an awful lot for. I can experiment with whether something comes out better in the microwave, the slow cooker, and the oven. And if I goof up, it's only me who knows it. And that I don't goof up that often, but when I do, I don't even have to throw it in the garbage. I mean, if it's something that Lucky, my dog, thinks that I'd eat, he'll eat it. My vacuum cleaner will clean up the mess, and he'll lick his plate clean, his bowl. And if anything goofs up, it goes right into the dog bowl.
That's funny. And I truly apologize for being redundant there.
Oh, she hadn't talked that much about cooking, so that was very appropriate.
Oh, Pam, this is Nan. I've known Pam since ICC days, which was about 10 years, I guess, or more. And we enjoyed each other over there, and I was very happy when she followed me over here to VIP. You really led an interesting life, Pam, and I've always admired you for the some of the things that you've done, and I enjoy calling you my friend.
Thank you, Nan. I appreciate that. Back to you.
I have a question, Pam. This is Chuck, and I want to thank you very much for putting yourself up to all this. I don't know, it takes a brave person to come before this forum. But I'm curious. I lost my sight when I was just going into high school and never attended regular school as a blind person. What is that like?
Well, when you attend regular school as a blind person, it's really interesting. And in the teen years, nobody wants to be different. So even though there are times when you stick out like a sore thumb, it was interesting, and it was challenging, but it was worth it. And I played with the regular kids. I mean, not hopscotch, but I mean things like dolls and everything. And I had two little friends, and they used to play blind girl hopscotch with me, where we just goofed around. And then in high school, I had friends that were really close, and it was interesting. I thoroughly enjoyed it, but there are also advantages to going to a school for the blind and being just a regular kid for a while. So I don't know completely how to answer that, because I don't know which I would have chosen if I had, you know, had made another the choices. But both were really nice.
Okay, well, I understand, Pam. When I went to high school and went blind, I just had a home teacher for high school. I probably going to a blind school would have been, you know, better for me, but that's how we did it. I went to college and attended regular school there. But, well, thank you very much. It satisfied a lot of my curiosity that I just didn't understand how blind people could make it in a regular school.
Just by being a kid and sometimes not even know whether you were making it or not. Now, there were other blind kids at school with me in junior high, in grammar, and in high school. And we had a resource room also, where we went first thing in the morning to get our books and to, until fourth grade, we brailled our homework, and the resource teacher put it in print so the regular teacher could grade it. And then in fourth grade, we were taught to type. So from then on, we typed our homework. And I love the keyboard on the computer so much more than I loved the regular. Typewriters were fine because you could actually type on them without them skipping. But when it got to the electric typewriter, I had to touch those keys so lightly, or else it would look like I had let my fingers do the walking. Because if you touch an electric typewriter too hard, boom, boom, it skips.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. Well, thank you very much, Pam. I do appreciate it.
Other questions? Well, Pam, it looks like you covered everything really well. And again, I'd like to thank you so much for letting me interview you. And I so enjoyed our conversation the other day when I was able to get to know you a lot better. So again, thanks. And have a happy, happy new year. Thanks, everyone, for coming, and happy new year to all of you.
Well, thank thank you, Susie, for interviewing me and all that. It was fun, and our conversation was a complete blast. You're right. It was a lot of fun. Happy New Year, everybody, and I'll see everybody in one activity or another.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.